All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome. Sorry, we've got some new kit here that we're trying out, and it's working because it wasn't working before, but it's working now. Welcome. It's John Bowd's All the Rage with John Bowd and myself. We're live. We've had a bit of a break, a well-deserved break as well. And this week we're talking about an issue that I've seen online. I haven't really delved into it because of all what's going on. I haven't seen the effect of Kill the Bill campaign. So John, please enlighten us.
I will more than happily do so. It's good to be back on the air. However, first this week I want to start with one other thing before we go into that. Solidarity and congratulations to the Shrewsbury 24, who after nearly 50 years have finally been cleared of any wrongdoing in their trade union activities and had their sentences quashed. They were convicted in 1973 for their trade union activities as part of the first ever building workers' strike. The Court of Appeal judged the convictions were unsafe, which is a very nice way of confirming they were the victims of a political stitch-up, with police corruption on top of a Tory government that were out to take revenge on the powerful trade union movement. So nothing new there, sadly. This goes to show, sadly, how long justice can take, but also that we must never give up on gaining this for working class people. So to the All Grieve Truth and Justice campaign, to those fighting for the victims of Grenfell, and all involved in Black Lives Matter, remember, keep up that fight and never ever back down. And on a very similar subject this week, yes, the police, crime, sentencing and courts bill. And the wave of protests that it has caused throughout the land so far, and hopefully going forwards. This has been met with a vicious level of violence from police forces towards those protesting the bill, giving them even more power, or giving even more power to the police. And that's what the main protest is about. The two main areas of contest in the latest bill concern the ability of the police to shut down protests and greater power to translate into harassing traveller, gypsy and Roma communities. The main part of the bill relating to the gypsy, Roma and traveller communities is new laws relating to residing on land in a vehicle without consent and expanding police powers to remove people from unauthorised encampments. This could include the power to remove vehicles, meaning taking away the homes of the people who live in them. Being found guilty of trespass can result in fines of over £2,000. The bill talks about GRT communities causing, quote, distress and misery to those who live nearby, end of quote, showing a level of assumption about these communities within the legislation, and not a small dollop of racism too, I'm sorry to say. Getting rid of encampments is the key here. Nothing about providing anywhere else for communities to go. So again, this would lead to more homelessness in a country where it's grown rapidly and extremely. It's also likely to increase mental health distress. Constantly being harassed by the police has a way of doing that. On the protest front, it gives police power to set rules about start and finish times for protest, set the noise limits of static protests, and even apply rules to a protest just by one person, including the power to impose ridiculously large fines if they choose to do so. It can deny a protest on the basis of it being annoying. I'm not sure what annoying protest is, other than any protest, which is supposed to be annoying to the people and the disengaged and the powerful that's attempting to target. But really, this is designed to stop people occupying public spaces or doing stuff like hanging off bridges, gluing themselves to windows, or employing other protest tactics to make themselves both seen and heard. In other words, the kind of stuff that some of us enjoy doing every Saturday, given half a chance. It will also become a crime to not follow restrictions that the protesters ought to have known about, very loaded word that ought, even if they have not received a direct order from an officer. The bill would make certain aspects of the Coronavirus Act permanent and allow police and therefore the state to directly dictate how, where and for how long any act of protest may take place. So removing it from being a protest at all will basically be something that's designed and controlled by the police force. As a lovely little topper to all this, it would also provide staggeringly stupid sentencing for damage is done to a statue up to 10 years in some cases, a longer sentence, in fact, than you can get for rape right now. And this is a major factor of many of the protests. People are protesting. There's quite a lot of crossover here. So there's the bill itself, which is clearly draconian and twisted and sick and the kind of thing you'd expect from a total authoritarian society, coupled with people who are protesting a lack of protection to women. We'll come to that in a minute about what that's about specifically, if you're not familiar, listeners. But there's that, and obviously interactions with the GRT community too. So there's a lot going on here. There's very much major issues about women's rights at the centre of this, and rights for everyone who wishes to take part in a protest, which free countries are supposed to allow you to do, not have them designed by the police, instructed, and I can't even imagine it from just a basic aesthetic level, never mind the complete lack of freedom involved. According to a report from the BBC, quote, ministers and police have worked together on the proposals covering protests. Police chiefs, including Dame Cressida Dick, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, were frustrated they could not do more to lessen the impact of Extinction Rebellion demonstrations in 2019. End of quote. And we also know that they're particularly riled up about the Black Lives Matter movement emerging last year here in Britain and in America, among other places. A former chief constable of Manchester has stated, "This is short-term and politically driven." And he went on to confirm that this is a reaction to the Extinction Rebellion and Black Lives Matter protests in the last couple of years. And it reminds him, in his words, of a politicisation of police that took place during the miners' strike of 84 and 85. The actions of a government who hate anyone who disagrees with them, in other words. It should also be noted that this comes hot on the heels of what has been dubbed the Spy Cops Bill, which involves legislation relating to undercover policing that gives officers performing this job the right to break the law as a part of their duties. This is up to and including rape, torture and murder. So in other words, if you're an undercover policeman, you can get away with anything because you can say it's all part of the job. I know that sounds a little bit crazy. And to be honest, I've actually read the legislation and stuff on this more than a few times over because I couldn't quite believe it myself. It says it's there in black and white. If I found it, you can find it. There was a scandal a while back involving many cases of undercover police tricking women they met in left-wing organisations, because it was always the left-wing ones they tried to infiltrate for some reason. You would have thought they'd be better suited to the right-wing ones. But basically trying to trick women into having relationships with them, even fathering children in some cases, which they did as part of their whole undercover scene. When their assignment finished, they tended to disappear, and the women and children never heard from them again. This is a major scandal that's been going on in Britain for the last, I don't know, about 5 years or so, I guess. Yeah, when you go in. Anyway, we are presently seeing a wave of demonstration and protest against this draconian bill and the increasingly authoritarian police and government trying to implement it. In response, we have seen a staggering level of violence from the police. This has been carried out towards unarmed people conducting peaceful protests every single time. A few weeks ago, there was a vigil for a lady who had been murdered and dumped. Her body had been dumped. And at the present time, Tom was speaking, the man under arrest on suspicion for this crime is a serving policeman. This crime opened up a wider public discourse on the level of violence women face every day in Britain and how this makes them feel, act and fear. At the vigil, many women spoke of how they fear throughout their everyday lives that men will commit violence against them and how this changes their behaviour. And some spoke of how all of this must end. They in particular talked about their routines of walking home, trying to avoid everything from catcalls, which can turn violent, to men actively intimidating them in the street. Anyway, at the vigil, around 8:30, 9 p.m. or so, police started attacking women around the bandstand area, where they had been gathered for some time. The excuse for this was centred around COVID-19 restrictions suddenly being an issue and the gathering being pronounced illegal. The application for the event had been rejected by police a few days before, so it was already not gone ahead with their approval, as should be, and a massive shout out to Sisters Uncut, mainly for their work in all of this. Nevertheless, droves of people were allowed into the park, and they stood around for hours before police decided to break it up quite viciously. Interestingly, they allowed people to gather in large numbers up to this point, and mainly during daylight. This even included Kate Middleton, who showed up for a quick photo op without a mask, and then the police waited until it got dark to decide that while someone was making a speech, they would viciously attack unarmed women. In fact, they have been very good at beating up women up and down the country. We've seen videos and photos of police charging directly into unarmed peaceful protesters, particularly in Bristol. More on that in a minute. And this includes one very disturbing picture of a pig knocking a woman out for just standing there. He literally runs straight into her and floors her, as we used to say. They have also attacked journalists in the streets for doing their job, even when they have identified themselves very openly as journalists. They even beat up a first aider in Bristol and have repeatedly arrested and harassed legal observers. Now, just a bit of background on that, because I'm not sure everyone knows what that is. A legal observer is somebody who volunteers at a demonstration. They do not take part directly in the demonstration, but they are an independent observer. I did a bit of training on it years ago, actually. So what happens is if you're out in the street, you wear a fluorescent bib, which says very clearly that you're a legal observer. You hand out what we call bus cards, which has information of lawyers you can call if you get arrested. And you overall observe what goes on there. In particular, you observe the police. And you then kind of, you've got a phone going, you've got a notepad, and you make notes on everything that happens. If a policeman steps up and starts getting there, you try and get his badge number, you try and detail the incident, and then you phone the back office, as it were, and talk to someone there who makes a note of it. And the whole thing goes on any kind of case report, which can lead to legal action later on. Legal observers also tend to go to places where squatters are not necessarily squatting, evictions, right? So any kind of eviction. And they've often been known to prevent evictions from taking place because those evictions are illegal, this kind of stuff. So that's what our job is. To be honest, I think it's disgusting that obviously the police are targeting legal observers, but I must say I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier because it is the kind of thing that annoys them. Anyway, they are now being targeted. So while they don't hold an official position beyond observer, nevertheless, it's a bit wrong to have put them in that position. Anyway, police have repeatedly beaten people with their shields and their batons when they were on the floor, again, unarmed, beaten them while they're being dragged away, and they've set dogs on people too. There was another video coming from Manchester where a young man was savaged by police while passing their van. It's been claimed they were sitting in the van, and he passed by and smirked, leading one copper to jump out and verbally abuse him before his friends followed and they assaulted him, knocked him around, all this kind of stuff, etc. Any honest assessment of police behaviour in recent times would have to concede that they are dangerously out of control. The GRT community took to the streets peacefully to voice distress about their state of affairs too. Their protest was met with the same police tactics, including beating up peaceful protesters with batons and shields again, etc. Some protesters later managed to return to the protest site and do a litter pick and leave the land as they had found it, a factor of this community that often doesn't get discussed or highlighted whenever there's media reports. A police head tweeted the following in the middle of all this. Here is his tweet. Policing by consent is a general principle, not duty. Peaceful protest is a qualified, not absolute right. Has limits when it infringes on rights of others. The law includes the current prohibition on public gatherings, and technically we are Crown servants, not public servants. Unquote. Thank you for the honesty, officer. So again, reminding you of the Coronavirus Act and all those things. So I'm sure wherever you are in the world listening to this, you likely have some restrictions on your movement in regards to laws and stuff based on the coronavirus situation. Absolutely. So again, I would ask about the Clapham Common vigil for Sarah Everett, that was her name. You can see videos yourself. There's people standing around. There's people flooding in. There's large crowds of people going. I have to ask why the police allowed this to happen in the first place, especially if it was a gathering or a vigil that had not been agreed the day or so before. Very interesting that you let this take place and then decided to start attacking people. I would also like to point out that studies have shown in this country that from all of the Black Lives Matter demos that happened last year and various other factors and bits and bobs, there is no example of the spread of coronavirus in these areas. They're all outdoors. The people who take part in them maintain social distance to the best of their ability until the police show up and push them all together. There's lots of mask wearing, etc. So that should be noted. Anyway, So back to our friend's tweet. Technically, we are Crown servants, not public servants. You know, policing by consent is a general principle and not a duty. Well, my first questions on this, after what the fuck, would be, those infringes on what these protests and how you define them, okay? Whose rights are infringed? How do you define this infringement? Next, it should be noted that during last year's protests, as I said, there was no spreading of COVID-19, masks, social distancing and all that. The present wave of protests are being conducted in exactly the same way, as best this can be when faced by police force using things like kettling, when it suits them, etc. Plus, next up, here's a little story that may have escaped the majority of people. The following is a direct statement from the victim who spoke about this about, a week ago. And I'm going to just give you a little bit of a warning because some of the content in this statement is a little bit upsetting. So, here we go. This morning, I got put under arrest and handcuffed by five undercover policemen who barged into the house in which the victim is living. No masks, initially claiming to my flatmate that I needed to sign for a parcel. One apparently was, or more than one, was dressed as a postman. But they followed her up to my room. They told me I had been disorderly, stroke violent, which I knew I hadn't. I was partially undressed, and they were all big men, and they wouldn't let me call anyone and told my housemate to go to her room while I was having an actual panic attack and shrieking. They told me I was going to be out in a cell in Kensham Police Station, but they needed to get a female officer over to help me dress first. I was clearly so distressed and confused because I wasn't even where they had placed me. Eventually, they brought up a photo of a girl who clearly wasn't me, and then eventually dropped the arrest and left me. But it is so it's so incompetent they could mistake me for this girl and actually get a warrant for my arrest when they can't even catch real criminals. My mental health has been pretty shit lately, especially anxiety, so now this has happened and the police are responsible for treating me like a criminal and giving me no respect when I wasn't even the person in the photo. So I don't have faith in the police or the British justice system. Now, that was a statement from at the moment I understand, unnamed person who was at their home in Bristol, I believe, and the mitts may very well have gone to one of these protests a week or two ago, arriving in the afternoon and leaving before it got dark. And certainly leaving before any violent action takes place. She was targeted by five policemen, at least one of whom was dressed as a postman, as I understand it, who barged into her house and conducted themselves in this horrendous way. She, in another report I heard, she said she didn't even have the space to actually put her clothes on. She had no trousers on, she had the underwear but no trousers, she couldn't put them on because they handcuffed her, so she couldn't do it with one arm, and they just stood staring over her. Okay, I'll come to something I was going to say about all of this later on, but clearly, totally unacceptable tactics. And by the way, folks, postman right now, if we've got something for you to sign, we put it on the doorstep, we knock on your door, and we show you that we're signing it in front of you. So you are not required to sign anything at the moment, okay? Because we're the only ones that hold the PDA units because they're, you know, metal and glass and plastic, which is something that we believe can, you know, help to transmit COVID-19. So we're the ones that hold it. We give it to you. If you're not in, we weren't your dog, you come and collect it. There is no situation whereby we should be stepping into your home, okay? Just to let you know that. Anyway, the right to protest is covered in the Human Rights Act, but this is not absolute, which tells you something about democracy on this grotty little island. It is also interesting to note that last year's VE Day celebrations, which included street parties by people doing congas with no masks on, were not broken up, and the anti-lockdown protests that have taken place have been far less violent in their policing, and I believe have actually been approved to take place. Even with the presence of openly far-right elements and people actively posing a threat to public health by intentionally gathering closely with no precautions. Bristol has been the epicentre of the fight back against the authoritarian government that we're facing right now. This is where people have refused to put up with their shit and given nearly as good as they got. These good people have, of course, been demonised and told lies about how they started it all, etc., the usual stuff the police and their masters have done for years. There are many events over the years where they have acted violently or violated people's rights while claiming they were under fire or whatever, and they've all turned out to be lies. In Bristol, the police claimed to have been attacked, and this motivated their brutality. It took less than a week to find out that, in fact, Avon and Somerset police had lied about all of this. There were no broken bones, no punctured lungs, or at least not one that was caused by protests. There were no hail of bricks and bottles that magically appeared from somewhere and then magically disappeared when anyone scanned the street to find the detritus. What there was instead is a forceful, violent oppression, as simple as that. In the ground reports from Bristol, talk of a long simmering situation of anger about police and government abuse since the 2020 BLM protests was what actually emerged. Most of the recent actions have taken place outside police stations that have a reputation for violating people's rights. The event outside Bridewell in late March followed an afternoon vigil for all women hurt in police violence and involved a sit-down protest some of the people present at the earlier event attended. Again, here they were overwhelmingly women. The police guarded the station in small numbers to begin with, not dressed in their Batman costumes, and were outnumbered accordingly to reports by about 90 to 1. So protesters to police was around 90 to 1. Still, nobody attacked the police in this situation. No rocks were thrown, no attempts to enter the building, any of that stuff. Then, suddenly, other units arrived, including mounted police, and they began pushing the crowd back, who had mostly been sitting on the floor peacefully all through this time. The situation got tense, people were angry, but still not attacking the police, and the country's finest decided this was the time to release dogs into the crowd, while also pepper spraying and beating people, including seated women, with their hands up. This onslaught was finally met with a fight back. Not to the level of violence they were being assaulted with, of course, because people cannot actually fathom the level of violence the police subject you to until you're subjected to it. It's very difficult to meet it without having all the gear. There was, however, enough to scare the police and realise that the people were not going to tolerate their shit anymore. So good on the people of Bristol. We then, of course, see how a narrative is formed in these cases by press, police and politicians that is wholly biased against the victims. Media reports are all about clashes between police and protesters. They never say that the police were the ones that started the clash. This is designed to lay blame for the incident at those on the receiving end of police brutality. It is obvious that protesters... from these reports, it becomes obvious protesters are the ones that have instigated the violence for some reason. You know, what were they doing there? Why were they... doing this, why weren't they all tucked up at home like the rest of us with a nice cup of tea? News headlines sometimes actually say exactly this, but they never say it any other way. In the case of Clapham Common, they cannot rightly even state attendees were protesters. They were mourners at the vigil. This gives you visions of sadness, candles, silence perhaps, which is not very useful when you're trying to make these people look bad and make the police look good. The outpouring of grief for a murdered woman is quickly used as a cover for police to show how in control they imagine themselves to be against the citizenship we are supposed to believe they are here to protect. This whole thing is constructed time and time again. Other things are not reported, including the wonderful show of unity in Bristol, where spontaneous first aid stations were set up to deal with the damage wrought by the police on these poor people. Supplies were shared and people took risks on themselves, helping those with the most serious damage out of the area. One thing that always strikes me, pardon the pun, in these situations is how quickly the police always lose it. In a job like this, you would think it a requirement to not lose your temper quickly, and I was under the impression that police forces were trained to some degree in de-escalating conflict, not creating it. Frankly, this lot have less skills of de-escalation than most union reps I know. In fact, I think they have less skills of de-escalation than the average school teacher. Again, for this to carry, we need some cover from the media. So the emphasis is put upon the gatherings being unlawful and taking any moral issues out of the picture. This gives us a simple story of the good and the bad, when the decision over who's who is made for you. As police injuries are listed without question, such as how they got them, and protesters or mourners are totally ignored. We sometimes see the moderate move or accepting the majority of people attending these events are good, but there is an element that most of you have never heard about before who are somehow infiltrated with the desire to cause trouble and are infiltrating the demos or vigils themselves. We see it too in the modern day figure of fear, the Antifa. We've talked about this lot before, folks, and I'm a very, very proud member. Those brave enough to face off fascists, far-right extremists of all shapes and sizes, when they try to march and intimidate people, acts of violence in themselves, are painted as thugs causing trouble while the police stand by and even have led fascists through the lines of anti-fascists in the past, which usually involves one of us getting our nose broken. If this was a country with decent ideals and intellect, this framing, quite frankly, would be entirely comical. But shaping reality is a question of power. Excuse me, water break here. Talking a lot today. Yeah, shaping reality is a question of power. The Metropolitan Police has 70 press officers. That's that many people working for your institution means you can basically shape reality. This, combined with an unwillingness for journalists to actually do their job, means you can put out whatever you like and control the narrative, including straight-up lies. The story of police being attacked and hurt is a classic example. Taking classic journalistic tools from the kit, who were the two independent sources for this story? That is what's correctly required, at least two, I believe, before going to press. At least it was once back in the day. So there's a good example. Where's your two independent sources? Did journalists do any investigation? Or just WhatsApp it from a police or government contact? Police have been caught lying even in court, which is a crime in the past. And you can see our opening story, our shout-out to the Shrewsbury 24 at the beginning of this week, for a very good example of that. And sure enough, we now know that the reports of police casualties and lurid claims of them having projectiles turned out to be, yet again, I underline it, total lies. Just like they were at Hillsborough, they lied there. Just like at the anti-globalisation demos in the 2000s, where they used to kettle people all the time. Just as there were when PC Simon Harwood, a policeman with a history of violence, caused the death of Ian Tomlinson when he attacked him in the streets of London. That's something everyone seems to have forgotten about. Just as it was in the early 2000s when there was far-right demos in mixed areas up in the north and the Midlands, and the victims who were getting beaten up by NF or BNP leftovers were then attacked by the police, and if any of them showed any, you know, resistance after years of this kind of harassment, they were told, oh, well, you're the ones behaving violently, etc., etc. The British establishment, including the present government, are in no position to criticise any other country for their treatment of dissidents right now. We hear reports from Hong Kong, for instance, of the police attacking and suppressing democracy protesters, while at the same time, media and ministers in Britain condemn the very same people subjected to the same oppression in this country, condemning them for bringing it on themselves and even making crass comments about hoping that the police didn't damage their batons or shields when hitting anybody. Meanwhile, Sir Keir's Labour Party still will not stand up for those being attacked while winning no extra votes for it and losing the young for probably an entire generation. Good work, Keith. In fact, many of his lackeys have been singing the praises of the police for beating people up, although many local members of the Labour Party in their various local constituencies have been demanding investigations into the police tactics and have condemned them. It's still our party, folks. Meanwhile, the Free Speech Brigade are either totally silent or joining the ranks of the bootlickers to government by condemning those speaking freely by saying that this bill is bullshit and anti-democratic. They have no care if protest is banned because they would be too gutless to attend one anyway, and they have nothing to protest about, being as they are in the heart of the establishment and not the victimised outsiders suffering because the modern world will not let them use racial slurs anymore, you know, the kind of crap they try now. Bunch of con artists, a lot of them, so I'm not going to talk about them anymore this evening. If this kind of authoritarian legislation and the police crackdown that goes with it were being applied in a country like Venezuela, you would be calling for the overthrow of the government again. If it were happening in Bolivia, well, it did happen in Bolivia, people would yell about democracy being eroded and call for things like sanctions, etc., etc. And now they've actually got a democratically elected government back in Bolivia. That's exactly what's happening. The middle and the right and the commentariat are talking about how justice shouldn't be served on the people who actually carried out a military coup the last time around, etc. So, and again, they're making a lot of noise about Hong Kong. It's just a country that had no democracy when it was under British rule. Always worth remembering that. By the way, I totally support the protests in Hong Kong, in case there was any part of that you didn't get. It's always worth noting the work done to progress and better our rights from the everyday people willing to put themselves on the line, and there can be no doubt that the government would have pushed this bill through easily by now and ignored the protests were it not for the work of organisations like Sisters Uncut, who we mentioned earlier, and all of the people coming together in Bristol and all throughout the country now, Manchester, London, Sheffield, even Truro, I think there was a bill the other day. All the people who refuse to allow systematic abuse of women to carry on, who refuse to allow our rights to be taken away from us gradually, and even if this is done allegedly by the police, etc. This government is typically libertarian, by which I mean they talk about freedom, but only mean it for rich scum like themselves. You will find that the vast majority of those proclaiming libertarian thought drift further to the right by the day, especially when the media stops paying attention to them, and they're either full-on neo-fascist or at least become crypto later on. For some people in Britain, the police are seen as a force of protection against crime, no matter the reality of the crime rate versus the kind of lurid stories published in the media. To many, however, the police are oppressors and a site of endless threat and anxiety. To black and other ethnic minority people, the police are an everyday danger. They also perform this role for women, increasingly, as we're now hearing, but also to tribal communities, to Muslims, and still often to the LGBT plus communities as well. They do not serve the public, but enforce power, no matter its level of legitimacy. At any event in London recently, with no prompting, they have gathered around the statue of Winston Churchill opposite Parliament, and offered it a greater level of protection than they presently offer the citizenry of Britain, especially women. This is really a symbol. In fact, maybe we can talk about what this is a symbol of in a minute. So, I want to deliver a conclusion to everything I've said and a few other bits, but Dave, I've talked for a bit, so do you want to come in? And do you understand the Kill the Bill thing any more now after this?
Sorry, John. I've just... while you were talking, absolutely. So, where it is at in UK Parliament at the moment, it's at committee stage, so it's gone past the first hurdle. It is now at committee stage, and I think they're going to delay that till the latter end of the year. But so Labour abstained from voting initially due to pressure from David Lammy and online pressure groups. They'll now vote against it. The bill itself, I do apologise, I'm trying to see here, the bill itself, this is one of the issues on the bill itself. So in the bill itself, it concentrates on attacks on statues, but not necessarily misogyny, but violence against women, and the Sarah Everard terrible murder by a police officer, but it concentrates on statues. Let's get that clear. I got no problem with statues, but it concentrates on statues and ignores that recent event, and it doesn't, why I bring up that tragic murder, it doesn't stop the police from committing violence on female peaceful protesters. It actually advocates violence against females and talks a lot about statues. The press, I mentioned the press, so there has been protests, peaceful protests. I know the Bristol protest was highly advertised, but it was also peaceful protests outside Parliament. There were some scuffles, but the police have admitted that there were no arrests. However, the statistic on the before the lockdown last March for arrests on a normal Saturday night was considerably more. That wasn't advertised. There's loads of arrests on a normal Saturday night in my local, down my local high street. And it's interesting, John, that when we have the birthday of Martin Luther King, and everyone celebrates it, and everyone says, what a great man, you know, civil rights. Some of the protests that were Martin Luther King took part in, important protests, peaceful protests, marches, sitting at counters when they shouldn't have been. I'm talking about Afro-Americans. And people praise them. The press praise them. The right-wing media praise him. Oh, what a great man. I wonder if his protests in the 60s would be deemed in this bill as illegal. Because you've got to remember, Lyndon B. Johnson had to beg the National Army to protect those protesters. What does that do for the Civil Rights Bill in America? You know, does that rip that up and say, well, actually, all those peaceful protests are now illegal under this 21st century bill? Those 1960s protests, peaceful protests for civil rights, given Afro-Americans the right to vote and to share a caf or share a table and go to a hotel. Does those protests for those rights make those protests under this bill illegal? It's interesting. Because what the press are saying is... look, I had to even... When you were informing us, I actually went onto the right-wing media and they were quite middle ground on it, to be honest. And what it was, and explaining to people what it is. And it did bring up violence against women. And it did bring up the fact that it talks about statues and doesn't say anything about a police officer being able to whack a woman peaceful protester. So we got to be real careful. And I will say this in regards to the 21st century. There's some wonderful work by pressure groups at the moment, online pressure groups, and they're getting some real good results. So regardless of whether this goes through or not, there's other stuff happening in the background. These pressure groups, 38 Degrees, for example, do some really good work, especially for the environment. However, with pressure groups, there is now corporate pressure groups being created of some 2 or 3 fossil fuel, obviously corporately sponsored, on the promotion of fossil fuel. So there's the other side of that. So again, but I will say this, on the protests that I've taken part in, particularly in the NHS, which was huge, and the anti-war demonstration in 2003, I never saw any violence. And this thing that we're all there shouting and masked up and attacking the police, it's so, so not true. John?
Absolutely, that is all true. Just feeding back on some of those parts, I don't normally bother with hypotheticals, but to answer your question, I think it's very, very clear that the tactics of someone like Martin Luther King that we say we all admire now would have absolutely been illegal under this bill. For one thing, they would have caused an annoyance. I mean, that was actually exactly one of the main things they were trying to do. They were trying to actively annoy white supremacist society in America and make them realise that black people are equal citizens to them. So you're quite correct. And the attitude towards Martin Luther King is one that absolutely sickens me, actually, because this man was a socialist. This man was, the day he was brutally murdered, was on his way to support striking, I believe it was sanitation workers. He was actually going to an everyday, you know, strike that you and I might have taken part in, like other stuff. So now basically what happens with a figure like him, and also worth remembering how deeply unpopular he was in mainstream American society at the point that he died. And again, a man who hosted many a peaceful protest that turned violent when the police chose to turn it that way, and was then blamed and pilloried and satirised, saying actually this was all somehow his fault and he'd started this. And, oh, your peaceful protests aren't quite so peaceful, are they, Dr. King, etc., all these smarmy bastards. But what is annoying is that people who now claim they love these rights, these liberties, certainly when they apply to them, they do not support the people that do these. They never do. Back in the old days, any time this has happened, any kind of event that's taken place, you know, trade union rights, women's rights, etc., they've never liked it. They will always complain about the tactics in some sort of snooty middle class or pseudo middle class way, in which they're kind of, oh, this is causing a lot of bother and damage, and oh, you can't go around the place, you know, damaging property, the suffragettes or whatever. You even had a few years ago people trying to claim, very middle class Tory people trying to proclaim that the suffragettes weren't actually that effective. It was really the suffragists, who were the nice middle class version, that wrote letters to their MP eventually went, yeah, okay, we'll give you the vote. It's absolute bollocks, simple as that. And they never, ever support these activities. They never support these events. It's just disgusting to me. But, is there anything else you want to plead back in before I go on?
Look, I think whoever introduces this bill, I know who you're representing, and I know what age group you're representing, and I know what parts of Britain you're representing, okay? Or you say you're representing. But I'm telling you this, it's dangerous, and the people that you're advertising to, that age group, they're going to be dead soon. I'm part of that age group. We're not going to... You're trying to appease that Union Jack type person. And I really respect that. But they're not going to be around forever. They're not going to be... They've got gas guzzlers and huge Range Rovers and things. They don't believe in electric cars and environment and all that. Because they know they're going to fucking die. We're not going to be around forever. We're talking about things for the future. Our children, our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. Does not evolve around a flag, John.
I couldn't agree more. And firstly, I was going to laugh in there because he talks about them dying soon. I was like, well, yeah, in the last year or so, the government's done a bloody good job of trying to kill them off. I've never seen somebody target their own voter base quite so extremely. And it says a lot about the state of the Labour Party at the moment that the government is still more popular. This is culture war bullshit. That's exactly it. Now, every other shot that any one of your members of representatives or parliament or whoever shows up in, there's a flag behind them. In some cases, it's so blatantly obvious the room they're in doesn't have a flag in it normally, and this thing's just been stuck in the corner. You know, and even if you laugh at that, if you dare to be a non-white, very attractive TV presenter who laughs at this on breakfast television, you end up getting a warning from your BBC bosses. You end up getting death threats. You end up being told you're not part of the society, which, by the way, is an absolute textbook example of why I have no time for that.
I'll tell you the politics we are in now, John. I watched breakfast TV yesterday at 6 a.m. Don't ask me what I was doing up so early. And a Labour MP, and we've gone back to the 90s, I'm really sorry about this. A Labour MP was asked a basic question on something, and it was a yes or no. I am sure that geezer still not answered the question. I'm sure he is chuntering on because he is typical of a member of a political party that is just trying to toe the line. It's a yes or no answer, and we've gone back to the 90s on this political stuff where people are just toeing the line, career politics. And I don't care whether you're Labour or Green or Tory, you're probably still talking on the telly now, and the question was asked yesterday morning at 6 a.m. Oh man, and my guy was chuntering on and on.
On the 90s, stay tuned to this show because we're going to discuss that sometime very soon. It is exactly that. It's the way they're trying to drag everything back. It's funny, you know, the right for years have accused the left, especially on the Labour side, of living in the past, living in these dinosaurs. And it's like, you know, the right of the Labour Party absolutely think that nothing has advanced between 1997 and 2001. I mean, they really seem to wish on those times. In fact, Alan Johnson, in an otherwise totally awful interview that he did on LBC, actually said that, to be fair. He talked to, you know, a load of bollocks and talked about that they've become a left-wing cult and all this and completely ignored facts of seats they'd lost before Corbyn came into power. But he still said, people like myself and Jack Straw, I think he said, are we in danger of kind of harking back to the old days that have passed now? I think he even admitted it. I mean, so credit to him for that one. The only thing I will give that prick.
Well, I'm sorry to go on about politics, and I did mention Lyndon B. Johnson, who... People watch the documentaries. It's a very tragic, enlightening, but tragic career in politics. But here is a man in the 60s from a very right-wing part of the country, Texas. And for what he did after, you know, he got that presidency, you know, under tragic circumstances, under three presidents before bringing in the Civil Rights Bill. remember, he was brought in on the ticket as vice president by the Kennedys, Bobby and John, because he would carry the South. He gave up that that support to get the bill through, and not just the bill, the voting bill, Medicare, Medicaid, jobs, poverty, a war on poverty. Yes, he never announced his candidacy, and I think he's the only one to do that for a second term, which I think he could have got. But this was politics then in the 60s. He put so much at risk, and then I've got that geezer on telly yesterday morning talking. He's still probably talking and not answered the question, yes or no.
Exactly what this is about, you know. This is the active example here, right, of giving you less and less actual power, and doing so. So, A, you've got Labour at the moment chasing this mythical red wall voter, which, even if there is one that's like Labour in you know, culture, but authoritarian in nature, conservative in nature.
I'm sorry, if I want a fully funded, if I want a fully funded NHS, which we all do, why do I have to have a label? I don't understand that. Why do I have to be a red wall? What? Red wall? What?
I completely agree, mate, and red wall is a load of bullshit anyway. But the main thing to even to say this onto Labour is, learn to count. You're appealing to a place where there's hardly any votes compared to the cities. And most of the cities, by the way, you've already got. Thank you, Mr. Corbyn. He brought you those in 2017 and again in 2019. No disaster otherwise, that election. But nevertheless, so you're constantly trying to appeal to this. The Conservatives are trying to appeal to it because, as they say, they know they're appealing to people who wouldn't go on a protest anyway. And many of them are so narrow-minded they don't understand anything unless they do it directly. And then you put to kind of lessen the impact on their mind of how much political power is being taken away from them, you throw in the cultural thing. So then you start waving your sodding flag around the place, and then you start guarding the statue of Winston Churchill, even though no one said they want to take a shot. I mean, I think it tells you something about the way people are realising things in this country, that you feel the need to guard a monument to Winston Churchill, because you know everyone knows what a bastard he really was. In fact, you can check one of our previous shows, I can't remember which number it was, to talk about this actual... The kind of deity level given to Winston Churchill, especially by people of a certain culture. Man's an absolute scumbag and no friend to the working class. And I think it reminded me, with all of the hoo-ha over the last month with the royal family, you know, people talk about these solid institutions that unite Britain, okay? In any country, in this case we're talking about Britain, they talk about the royal family, they talk about these ideas of democracy and a democratic land where people are free to be where they want to be and all this bollocks. And they talk about it as part of a total bullshit report that's just come out saying that there's no institutional racism, written by a hand-picked bunch of people who openly said they didn't believe in institutional racism before they even wrote the report. All this kind of stuff. You know, they had this gaggle of flag shaggers. And they throw this in front of you and kind of go, this is your culture and these people over here want to take it away. Farage ends up tweeting during one of the Bristol protests, this is what Black Lives Matter is all about, this violent disorder, these marks up. There wasn't any BLM there, you fucking numbnuts. What are you talking about? You know, I mean, okay, there was certainly people there who share the same views. Yeah, sure, and that would be the same. But, it's like, you can't help it. This is your natural racist reaction. These people are true reactionists. And this is what they're appealing to. So you have this cultural idea, and I wouldn't be surprised if John Cleese got in there and went, these are the people who are trying to stop 40 Towers from being shown every week on the TV over and over and over again, to the point that you just meet some kind of nada of wanting to kill yourself because you're sick of seeing the Major, you know, and don't even get me started on the Fools and Horses. This is, you know, this whole thing, it's just crap. I'd like to have a more refined, intelligent way of dismissing it to you, but I don't. It's just utter crap. It's culture war bullshit. And it doesn't relate to your life. Whereas having the right to attend the protest only relates to your life, but hey, maybe it doesn't relate to you directly. How about thinking about somebody else for once and thinking about what this does to the very notions of democracy? Like I say, you know, authoritarian police kicking people's doors in, pretending to be postmen and getting into the house to harass someone who then let go later on. Shut your eyes and don't hear me when I say Britain, OK? okay? Think about it. Think of this is happening in Hong Kong. Think of it happening in Belarus. Think of it happening in North Korea. Think of it happening in Venezuela. You'd be calling for all kinds of actions, sanctions, crackdowns, attacks. Think of China doing this. Chinese government does shit like this all of the time. You know, now the British government are doing it. Why is it somehow better? Why is it somehow more acceptable? Again, questions I would have thought a real journalist could ask, really. You know, not a postman who
didn't answer
the radio show.
Well, as I said, I find it a very un-British bill proposal, and let's make that clear, it's a bill proposal still. I find it very un-British. Here's a country, right, my country, and I'm not being patriotic, this is what I'm going to say. Here's a country that in the 60s, and sorry, I'm sport-related, in the 60s, when Muhammad Ali had his title taken because he wouldn't fight in Vietnam, and he's openly documentally, and it's in his book and everything, where he is said that the country that stood by him and thought he was being treated unjustly was the UK. That they didn't fall into that patriotic US crap. They, you know, and even now, a lot of the elderly British citizens still talk about how he was treated. And it's really odd. And I think that sort of attitude, where the UK has come out on top and had certain ways of doing it, I think these sort of bills take, I've got to be honest, for Mr. Farage and people like that, these sort of bills take away the very thing that you say that we are being or people are trying to take away. It's not. As I said, if we could use the boxing analogy of Ali or Cassius Clay, then there was a unanimous in the UK in the 60s that if that's what Muhammad Ali wants to be called, that's what we should call him. And they never, the US used to call him Clay. The British commentators never called him Clay, ever, ever, ever. And the British public respected that. And then we look at this bill, takes us back years. And I think it's very un-British, personally. But there you go.
A quick 80s reference for you old listeners out there. This is a free country, goddammit. If a man wants to call himself Ali, you should respect his wishes and call him Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. I love that Welsh accent, John. Take it away.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's brilliant, yes. Now downtown New York, Jewish via Wales. Okay, I want to make my conclusion toward this, but before I do, I'm just going to knock this out for you very quickly. Dealing with police surveillance, I know some listeners, I hope, will be inclined towards taking part in this protest, and certainly I have yet to actually physically take part in one. I know I'm very ashamed for that, but I absolutely will be doing so in the near future. I've had vaccine number one. I'm hoping to get shot with the second one before I go out there, but there you are, just to keep everybody safe. Anyway, dealing with police surveillance. We have known for years how much the police like to spy on social movements, and NETPOL, the Network for Police Monitoring, have a handy guide for dealing with them on protests. And we're actually going to put this in the show description along with a few other things, including a 38 degrees petition, by the way, about this, and some information, in case I don't get a chance to say it later, some information about the Deliveroo strike that started today for their drivers. Please go and support them anywhere you can. Anyway, back to this. So Network of Police Monitoring, or NETPOL, these are part of their information and suggestions. Police liaison officers, these are the people you need to look out for, okay? First, you need to look out for police liaison officers. They're the ones in the blue bibs who pretend to be nice, and they collect everything that you say to them. So don't say anything. There's no such thing as a friendly conversation with the police. Also, watch out for evidence gathering teams, also present on protests. They're in orange bibs, and they're often in pairs and recording or photographing activists and surveying the crowd. Their job is to record who is at a protest and what they are doing, and their evidence is used against activists later on. You are allowed to walk away or hide your face if they are filming or photographing. You can do that. It is a right that you have at the moment. By tomorrow, who knows, but right now you do. NETPOL also advises you attend protests with others, Do not have your phone logged into any apps that track or trace anything or your position. At least you can even leave it at home if you're gutsy enough to go out somewhere without a phone on you. Be wary of what you share on social media, and if using a camera, keep it on the police and do not live stream. Keep wearing that mask too, even if we do make it out of COVID and police cannot require you to remove it unless you are being stopped and searched. A blanket 60AA power is in place. Okay, so there's real specific questions you ask if they ask you to remove your mask. Is there a blanket 60AA power in place, in which case can you explain it to me, etc. Also, NetPol says, remember these five key messages. No comment. You do not need to answer police questions, so don't. No personal details. You do not have to give personal details under any stop and search power, so don't. One exemption to this is that if the police are issuing an on-the-spot fixed penalty notice or fine for breaching coronavirus regulations, in which case you are required to give your personal details. Otherwise, no. So, again, if it's COVID, and you will find that out under the next piece of advice. Ask under what power to challenge the police to act lawfully. Why are you doing this? Why are you questioning me? Under what power are you questioning me? What is your basis today, etc., etc. Some police officers rely on you not knowing the law. I've had this experience myself, actually, so I can attest to that. If you are asked to do something by a police officer, ask them what power, i.e. what law, they are using and why they are using it. If arrested, use a recommended solicitor with protest experience, not the duty solicitor. Duty solicitors are not experienced in protest law and often give bad advice. If you want to know better advice on this, I recommend checking out Green and Black Cross website. They do a lot of work on legal observing and let you know what your rights are. So shout out to them. No caution. Offering you a caution is a way the police may ask you to admit guilt for an offence without having to charge you. It is an easy win for the police as they do not have to provide any evidence or convince a court of your guilt. So don't accept any cautions. Okay, so that's advice which, again, you can find when we send the show description out. Okay, conclusion. Let's see if I can do it in 3 minutes and break my bad habit of overrunning into today's show. Okay, so everything we've talked about tonight in regards to Kill the Bill, the protests, the justice of all this. This is a very simple issue and there is no middle ground. On one side, you have the people who want Britain to be an authoritarian state, if not totalitarian, whose stormtroopers batter anyone in the streets they do not like. Those who are standing up for their rights, and for that matter, everybody else's. Always remember that, okay? These cucks of police and state are the people who really hate Britain. They hate everyone here who is not white. They hate the young, the LGBT, plus women, differently abled, migrants, refugees, gypsies, sex workers, and you and me. They would get hard upon seeing the army march through the streets, killing anyone that they thought were wrong in some way. In fact, these people should bloody well live in Indonesia right now. Is it Indonesia? Sorry, the Philippines. I do apologise. On the other side, we have the brave people going up against fierce violence to fight for what is right, to preserve the minor amount of freedom that we have in this country that was fought for by our ancestors, while facing brutalisation and often doing all of this for people they do not even know. They should be fully supported. If you want a vicious country that cracks down on dissent, maybe you should be the one that fucks off to live in North Korea or Myanmar or the Philippines. What we have here is the revolt of the comfortable, scared to death that the unworthy might ease their way into lives of better benefit, and that the easy life that they have been given so far will be snatched away, or maybe they're just upset and scared because they know that it deserves to be taken away. If any of this is too much for you to take in or understand, I don't care. If you disagree, it is unlikely you will do it in any honest way, so I will not waste my time with you. Either be on the right side or the wrong side, and most of you are pathologically incapable of the former. Seriously, fuck off and die if you haven't done already. I have no middle ground on this issue. Everything we've listed tonight, you know, and we've talked about these things in detail, we've had a good laugh too, but as far as this is concerned, we're talking about, you know, taking away liberty and freedom. I'm sick to death of hearing anyone's middle ground arguments. Anyway. There is no meeting of us in the middle. There is no compromise because we do not compromise with fascists or anything like it. The police in this country are fucking savages. Simple as that. They are the biggest snowflakes who are unwilling to be held to account, and they threaten and violate the rights of anyone who merely questions their rule, using the law and more often working outside of it, as we've given you some good examples of tonight. From my side here on All the Rage, I completely support these protests, and speaking personally, I could care less if any pig does get hurt while suppressing the freedom fighters who are defending themselves. Not to mention those who get hurt by their own dogs because they drag them away from pizza being thrown at them and the dog ends up biting them. Go and check that video out. It's nothing to do with me. These demonstrations and protests have spread throughout the land, and I hope they will continue to do so until this vile bill is revoked and we finally face the truth about policing in this country, who it is for and who it victimises systematically. In fact, even with these protests over this bill end, I hope they go on for other issues. We cannot get any control over the mainstream media. They are run by millionaires who hate us. They should be broken up for starters, and more alternative, honest outlets should be supported. No one is under any obligation to follow the rules demanded by these vultures. What is troubling for me is that this endless narrative of lies against victims of police violence, it really just tells you the people that who are and are not accepted by society. And it's the idea that really you deserve this abuse. Shutting people out, pushing them to extremes, possibly, is what's probably going to be the result of this sort of thing. And certainly it shows no care for the welfare of those deemed unworthy by a media made up of and consumed by hateful brutes who are hell-bent on making your life miserable for the crime of living it. It is vitally important now to communicate our own experience and highlight the truth. Always challenge the authority of those engaged in these actions against citizens merely trying to express dissent or even simply mourning for another murdered woman walking home one night, committing no crime. All aspects of opposition to the bill will need to find shared ground and push forward this narrative. Like so much that has happened over the last year, we cannot hide away and simply return to normal. That life was not good for far too many people. Ironically, the bill makes peaceful protest and law-abiding worthless because you could be locked up for causing an annoyance. This is likely to cause more aggressive protests, and perhaps that is the idea, as it will make crackdowns even easier. Don't take that bait. Choose to change the world instead.
Cheers, John. You can catch John next week from 7. Next week we'll be talking about the Indian farmers debacle, John will be talking in detail and interviewing on that.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.